Hello, welcome. We're back again. And we're going to wrap up our third segment in the introduction to business organizations. And we're going to talk tonight about the law of employment. And the law of employment is different than the law of agency. Remember, you don't have to be compensated. You can have a gratuitous agency, but with employment, you have to be compensated. It's part of the definition of employment. And there's different rules with employees versus agents. And we'll get into all that tonight, and we'll talk about employment. And then we're going to wrap up with our case, Murillo versus Park Slope U-Haul, which in a lot of ways is a sad case, but it's illustrative of the law of agency. So let's jump in with employment, the wonderful world of employment law. What is employment? It's defined by Black's Law Dictionary as the act of employing or state of being employed. Kind of a definition is kind of circular. That which is engages or occupies, yeah. That which consumes time or attention, or an occupation, profession, trade, post, or business. But really, when you boil down the definition, it's an act to engage or hire one's service in return for payment for that service. You have to contract to hire and you have to pay the person. Why? Because it's employment. If it's not paid for, it's volunteerism. Employment is engaging someone's service and then paying for it. The labor law definition in the New York State labor law is where someone is permitted or suffered to work. Well, that doesn't involve the payment aspect, but it should. And employment is paying someone to do work. Now, an employee is different than an independent contractor. An independent contractor is one who has the calling of their own and is hired to do a particular job and is paid for doing that job and follows their own discretion in carrying out the job. The entity hiring the independent contractor has no right of control of the manner and method that the independent contractor performs the job. Whereas an employee, on the other hand, is someone who's subject to the supervision of the employer in the details of the work. An employer has the right to control the manner and method in which the employee performs the work. It comes down, whether you're an employee or an independent contractor, to who has the right to control your work. If you have the right to control it yourself and are just paid for the job, then you're an independent contractor. If the person hiring you has the right to control the manner and method of your job, then you're an employee. New York State is kind of a different animal when it comes to employment law. We're one of a very few states that is what is known as an employment at will state. Under New York State law, you are an employee at will, unless you aren't. And there's a couple exceptions which will get you out of the employment at will. But what an employee at will is an employee that the employer has the right to hire or fire for any reason or no reason whatsoever, as long as it's not an illegal reason, such as a violation of the federal civil rights law or the state human rights law. I can't fail to hire you because you're an African American. I can't fail to hire or fire you because of the fact that you're a woman or a man, or because of your sexual preference, or because of your past military background, or because of your sexual preference. All of those are protected classes. But for any other reason or no reason at all, I can fail to hire you, or I can fire you. So I can fire you because today is Tuesday. I can fire you because I don't like the fact that you have a tattoo. I can fire you because I don't like the fact that you are constantly itching your face. Why? Because as an employee at will, I can hire you or fire you so long as it's not for an illegal reason. Now, an exception to that employment at will doctrine is the employment contract. The employment contract gets you out of being an employee at will. With the employment contract, you can only fire a person for a reason in which there is a contract. So if the contract says that these are the reasons you can fire someone and you can only fire them for cause, that means you have to have a legitimate reason, which is specified in the contract, then you're not an employee at will if you have that contract. The biggest sources of employment contracts are actually collectively bargained, unionized employees. So if you are a collectively bargained employee, if you are a union member who has their employment contract negotiated by the union with the employer, then you're not an employee at will. Similarly, if you have your own employment contract, then that's generally for very big, important people being hired. A surgeon who's world famous and gets hired by the hospital. Tom Brady, who gets hired by the football team. Those people have employment contracts, and it specifies under what grounds you can be discharged. And that contract supersedes the employment will doctrine. How do you know if you have a contract? How do you know? You didn't sign it, and if you're not collectively bargained, could a contract exist and you don't know it? Well, some courts, primarily the federal courts, not the state ones, have held that in New York State, if you have an employee manual which sets forth all kinds of parameters for being hired and fired, then that could actually constitute an employment contract, because the employer will be held to the provisions of that manual. It's very unusual, but it can happen. So remember, the default system is employee at will. Can hire or fire you for any reason or no reason at all, as long as it's not an illegal reason. Or if you have an employment contract that substitutes employment at will, those are for very high profile people, for very specialized professions. Or if you are a unionized employee who is collectively bargained for. Otherwise, you fall into employment at will in New York State. Now, what are some of the illegal reasons, as we say? Employment regulation. Under federal law, under Section 1983 of Section 42 of the United States Code, or under Section 290 of this New York State Executive Law, you have the civil rights laws. The federal civil rights law is called just that, this federal civil rights law. The state law is called the state human rights law. And that provides that you cannot have employment discrimination. That means you can't fire someone, you can't fail to promote them on the basis of race or color, religion, sex, national origin, age, gender, disability, or pregnancy. Under state law, that has been expanded. age, race, creed, color, national origin, sexual orientation, military status, sex, marital status, disability. All those provisions are within state law. If you have the belief that you were fired for one of those illegal reasons or failed to be promoted for one of those illegal reasons, you can bring an action under those statutes. You get attorney's fees, and you can bring it either under the federal law or the state law. You have a choice, either one. They both provide broad coverage. The state, as I said, provides a little bit broader, but the federal law does too. So now, that's regulation. What about collective bargaining? Under the National Labor Relations Act, private sector employees, people who do not work for government, are entitled to unionize. The National Labor Relations Act, called the Wagner Act, which is Section 29 of the United States Code, provides that private sector employees have the right to collectively bargain and join a labor union. The State Labor Relations Act provides nearly identical law, and it's contained within the state labor law. Now, that, as you notice, is only for private sector employees. They have a constitutional provision out there for free association that allows anybody to join a labor union. But they don't have the right to, as a public employee, to have collectively bargain under the Constitution. So these statutes provide a provision for the private sector, the National Labor Relations Act, the State Labor Relations Act. But there's also a state statute that allows for private sector or public sector employees to also unionize and have the right to collectively bargain. This law came about in the 1960s because there was a substantial strike of both the police unions and the transportation unions, all the entities that ran the New York City subways principally, back in the 1960s. And Governor Rockefeller said, "This is awful. We can't have this happen where public employees are striking." So because they shut down all the trains at Christmas time in New York City, that's a huge economic time for the city of New York. So Governor Rockefeller called in the world expert on labor relations, a guy by the name of George Taylor. And he convened a commission to say, how do we stop public employees from striking? It was already against the law, but they did it anyway. So Mr. Taylor came up with a provision of law, which now is Article 14 of the state civil service law, that bears his name, the Taylor Law. And what the Taylor Law says is public employees, teachers, law enforcement, anybody who works for government has the right to be collectively bargained for and the right to join a union. Now, what it doesn't allow, it doesn't allow for striking. In order to have this right to be collectively bargained for and join a union, they gave up the right to strike. So if you strike as a public employee, it's actually against this statute, the Taylor Law, and you have to substitute multiple days worth of salary for every day you strike. So public sector strikes have pretty much gone away as a result of that. They're not completely eliminated, but they're pretty much. And the Taylor Law is the reason for it. It's been very effective. It's allowed for public sector workers to be collectively bargained and to be able to set their workplace conditions under that statute. Now, You also, on top of all these regulations, have workplace protection laws. Both the federal and the state governments have these health and safety laws. There's OSHA and there's labor laws, which regulate workplace conditions and minimum wages and hours of employment. How often a truck driver can drive, how many hours in a day you can force someone to work, what is your minimum wage. All of those are under the labor and OSHA laws. Occupational Safety and Health Administration is what OSHA stands for. It's a federal agency. All these laws, both on the federal and state government levels, help to regulate employment. Now, the employment relationship, as we discussed, the default in New York State is employment at will. You can have individual employment contracts, but they're rare. Most contracts are collectively bargained for. They supersede the employment at will doctrine. But if you don't have one, if you don't have an employment contract, you're an employment at will employee in New York State. Employment protection laws do provide protection beyond the agreements, but great flexibility is afforded between the parties of employment. And that relationship is kept very, very sacred. Why? Because we want people to have jobs. We don't want to have a disincentive for overly regulating employment to the point where people don't get hired. So it is a balancing test to be able to keep the workplace safe, but also keep it free, to be able to allow for employment relationships to be set between employees and employers. Now, we do provide protection for people like whistleblowers. If you find that they're using some kind of toxic chemical in your workplace, if there's some kind of illegal activity going on, those people are protected and can't be fired for doing what is right to report that sort of thing. But overall, just recognize New York State, the default entity, is employment at will. Now, as we said, you have a right to collectively bargain as a private sector employee. The Fair Labor Standards Act, the National Labor Relations Act, and the National Labor Relations Board, which is the entity created under the National Labor Relations Act to administer the standards of the act, they all set forth the right to collectively bargain, join a union, and be able to operate on that basis. Union certification is part of collective bargaining. In order for a union to be able to negotiate on your behalf, it has to be certified. Many states have enacted what are called right to work laws. New York State does not have that because we are an employment at will state. But many states have enacted right-to-work laws, which state that workers can choose not to collectively bargain and not join a union. Now, what are some additional issues within employment? Pensions. Pensions and retirement, they are a critical benefit. We have a federal statute, ERISA, because in the 1970s, there were a lot of pension plans that were being raided by unscrupulous employers and unions who maintain them. This federal law protects employees and their pensions by requiring the very highest standards of the persons administering the funds, providing for reasonable vesting of benefits, adequate capitalization of funds so that the funds actually appear when it comes time to retire, and insurance to guarantee payments. ERISA is a very important statute because it allows for employees to know that their pension is going to be there at the time that they go to retire. And your pension is, in effect, a portion of your salary because it's delayed. You're going to get it after you retire, but it's part of your compensation package. So pension plans are very critical. In New York State, as a public employee, your pension is guaranteed under the state constitution, and that the state of New York cannot dip into it, cannot borrow against it, cannot diminish its benefits under the state constitution. It's constitutionally protected. We also have, in the event that you become unemployed, you have unemployment benefits. Those benefits pay you for a period of time when you're unemployed, albeit not at your same salary, a much diminished salary, for a limited time if you're out of work due to no fault of your own. You don't get unemployment if you quit your job. You do get unemployment if you lose your job through no fault of your own. So if you are fired for misconduct, you don't get unemployment. If you quit your job, you don't get unemployment. But if you lose your job because there's nothing you could do wrong, did wrong, but the economy experienced a downturn, your employer couldn't keep you anymore, then you are able to get unemployment benefits. They're available for job placement, and that tries to get you at a sustainable wage that you're able to take on for a period of time until you find another job. Okay. Other benefits include things like workers' compensation. You cannot sue your employer for a accident that occurs on the work site. So as a result of that, the government has provided for what we call workers' compensation. They automatically give you payments for your injuries sustained in a workplace accident. So if you get hurt at work, you're able to make a claim against the workers' compensation insurance program and get paid. It's what is known as a scheduled loss. So if you lose an arm, it's worth X dollars. If you hurt your back, it's worth Y dollars. All you have to do is prove two things, that you got hurt and that you got hurt at work. You don't have to sue them. You automatically get payment based on that schedule. Workers are prohibited from suing, as a result, their employer from negligence, but they automatically get the payment. There is an exception for certain federal employees because the Federal Employers Liability Act actually came into place before there was workers' compensation. Workers' compensation came in the 1930s. What was called the FELA, the Federal Employers Liability Act, came in decades before that. And it allows for certain federal employees to be able to sue the federal government for their injuries. Airline workers, railroad workers, stevedores, those are people who load and unload ships and trains. They are able to recover under the statute if they prove negligence in the slightest degree. So they can turn around and sue either public or private sector, railroad, airline, steamship company to be able to recover for their injury. So this is an exception from workers' compensation. Another benefit that is rather modern is family medical leave. If one of your family members gets sick or due to paternity or adoption, you are able, or maternity for that level, you're able to get a coverage where you get a payment for family medical leave. That can be if you're caring for a sick family member or if you have one of these conditions, as said. Lastly, another benefit that came about in the 1930s is Social Security. This provides an economic payment benefit for retirement, death, or disability. Social Security is funded by taking a portion of your paycheck. You actually pay 12% 6% by the employer, 6% by the employee, that goes into the federal budget, and in which turn they turn around and budget these payments. There's questions over the solvency of Social Security, but it's still operating, and we'll see if it still continues. Employee privacy. Many people have a misplaced belief in employee privacy. Generally, employees have no privacy because the phone you use, the office you have, the locker you have is generally viewed as your employer's. So you don't have many rights with respect to that. Employers have the legal right to monitor employees' phone calls, internet traffic, email, under federal statute passed in 1986, the Federal Electronic Communications Privacy Act. Some state statutes do limit eavesdropping on private personal communications, but overall it's generally viewed as that is the employer's phone, that's the employer's computer. So as a result of that, there's not a lot of privacy there. Employers often notify employees of the policies on searching their lockers, their desks, their offices, but by and large, because those are owned by the employer, generally not a lot of rights there. Drug and alcohol testing is also generally permissible. All of these things, however, are also subject to collective bargaining agreements. So anything here, even though it's generally permissible, if you have a collective bargaining agreement that says it's not or places limitations on that, then you have to follow the collective bargaining agreement. Okay. Immigrant issues. American citizenship can be and often is a condition of employment. You have to be a citizen in order to be an employee. Why is that? You have to pay Social Security taxes, you have to pay taxes, and you have to have a Social Security number in order to do that. You have to either be a legal immigrant or have to be an American citizen to have those Social Security numbers. Immigration laws prohibit, specifically under federal law, the employment of illegal aliens. By the way, that term is not a pejorative. It's in the federal law. Now, if someone finds it offensive, I'm sorry, that's in the federal law. That doesn't mean those are bad, evil people. It just means that under federal law, if you are in this country in violation of the federal law, you are deemed an illegal alien, a person who comes to the United States without a legal authority to be here. Now, whether or not that is the right policy for the United States, those are political issues that can be discussed. Certainly all people, regardless of their immigration status, ought to be treated with respect and kindness because they're human beings. And that is just the nature of being a human being and being kind to other human beings. That being said, we shouldn't get hung up with terms of art because an illegal alien under federal law is a person who is here under violation of that federal law, federal immigration laws. Employers are liable for not performing sufficient background checks to determine required immigration status, including not following the verification procedures or compliance with the hiring programs. Now, our immigration system is very challenged right now, and a lot of people think that it should be reformed. Well, until it gets reformed, this is what the law is. Whether or not that law ought to be changed are political discussions that we don't engage in this class, okay? What we do talk about is what the law is now, and the law says that if you are from another country, you're not a citizen, you're here illegally, then you're not entitled to employment. Okay. Issues regarding employment discrimination. This is under the federal civil rights law or the state human rights law. You cannot discriminate against people, as we said, on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, all of these categories. The Federal Equal Opportunity Commission administers the Federal Civil Rights Act. You have a federal civil rights agency that does that. A discrimination claim can be brought under Section 1983. And as we previously stated, you get attorney's fees if you win on that. So it's a very powerful statute. It's a very strong statute. It should be. That statute really has turned around employment discrimination from what it was in the 1960s. The state human rights law does something very similar. And instead of being administered by the Federal Equal Opportunity Commission, it's administered by the state counterpart of that, the New York State Division of Human Rights. And that can be enforced, that state human rights law, by means of a civil action in state court, whereas a federal action is brought in federal court. Now, those statutes, in addition to preventing employment discrimination, also address the issue of sexual harassment. Employers can be held vicariously liable for a supervisor's action. And generally, it is a quid pro quo case. If you have an employee who is asking for sexual favors in return for either not discriminating against somebody, not advancing them or not hiring them, or by penalizing them in their job, that is known as a quid pro quo case. They're asking, quid pro quo is Latin for this, for that. They're asking for sexual favors in return for some kind of advancement or special treatment or to not punish you. That is not permissible under either state or federal law, and you can sue on that under either a 1983 action or a state human rights action. Either pathway, you can bring it. And if a hostile work environment is created by that employer, on that employee, whereby there is sexual harassment, you can sue. Even non-supervisors are held accountable under these statutes if the supervisors know that this is being occurring and they take no reasonable actions to stop it. The employment relationship is very straightforward. Remember, an independent contractor differs from an employee. It all comes down to whether or not who has the right to control the work. Working conditions are governed under both state and federal law, but we give a large leeway under our employment at will state to be able to have people have jobs and freedom and how they create their own working conditions. Anti-discrimination laws, you have the Civil Rights Act, the Equal Pay Act, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, the Age Discrimination Employment Act, and the American with Disabilities Act. All those federal laws come together to prevent discrimination based on all those protected classes that we listed. That's it for employment. Next time, we're going to talk about our case, which is Michael Murillo versus Park Slope U-Haul. I hope you've enjoyed it. Remember, employment is a critical aspect where we are able to work and perform an important function for ourselves and our family, developing the career we want. Agency is a critical aspect whereby you get to stand in the shoes of your principal and create a very important service whereby you act with a third party to be able to do the bidding of your principal. We'll see you shortly. Thanks so much.